Hello, this is James Wagner, your host for today. Our program today is titled, Who is Rush Limbaugh? A Liberal Assessment. Commentary is by Dr. Joseph A. Bagnall. Dr. Bagnall has served as an administrator and educator teaching United States history and political science at the college level for many years. His past publications include Depression Dialogue, an anthology of representative political dialogue of the Depression Decade, 1965. President John F. Kennedy, A Grand and Global Alliance, The Summons to World Peace Through World Law, 1968. United States History, The Relevant Issues, co-author, 1973. President John Fitzgerald Kennedy's Grand and Global Alliance, World Order for the New Century, Lanham, Maryland, University Press of America, 1992. In 1985, he wrote and produced a television documentary titled John F. Kennedy's Lost Pathway to Peace, which aired on KCET, Los Angeles, and a number of PBS affiliates. It also aired on TBS on the 69th and 70th anniversaries of JFK's birth and is currently available on home video.
Rush Limbaugh is, by his own definition, a political commentator. His three-hour syndicated radio show is carried on more than 600 stations, and he reaches a cumulative weekly audience of upwards of 20 million people. On November 7, 1993, he was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame of the Museum of Broadcast Communications. He also considers himself a writer. His first book, The Way Things Ought to Be, sold over 2 million copies in hardcover, and his second book, See, I Told You So, was published with 2 million copies in the first printing. In addition, his Limbaugh Letter has over 350,000 subscribers. Limbaugh's television show debuted in September of 1992. It is produced by Roger Ailes, the former media advisor to Presidents Reagan and Bush, and is now seen in the entire United States. The Limbaugh format for both radio and television is comfortable and safe. Neither medium features guests, and call-ins are heavily screened, if not specifically programmed. There is only one expert on the Rush Limbaugh show, and with the rare exception of an appearance of the likes of Vice President Dan Quayle and President George Bush, all the focus is on Rush. Limbaugh learned early in his career that he was no match for informed guests, so he developed a format that built his own credibility by viciously attacking others with no allotted airtime for response. He delights in screening selected clips of President Clinton's changes in policy, his compromises, and political accommodations, characterizing the president as opportunistic and slick. Mr. Limbaugh apparently doesn't understand that flexible statesmen have had to compromise in order to produce virtually every major piece of legislation in American history. Even the American Constitution, the greatest political document ever struck by the hand of man, has been correctly characterized as a bundle of compromises. Why doesn't Rush evaluate the president's compromises on his health care proposal in that context? And Limbaugh must certainly remember the last election when he portrayed Pat Buchanan, the conservative Republican, as righteous, and George Bush, the modern Republican, as an evil sellout. When Bush won the Republican nomination, however, Limbaugh shamelessly shifted his support to Bush in a manner that made his insistence on rigid consistency a farce. A skillful editor could follow Limbaugh's comments, just through the election of 1992, selectively screening his various changes in positions, choosing the most unflattering facial expressions, and the results would be devastating to his reputation as one who never compromises, accommodates, or changes his mind. Constantly posing as the incomparable expert, Limbaugh's credentials for political commentary are non-existent. He had the usual exposure to American history and government in high school, but washed out of Southeastern Missouri State University in his freshman year, flunking even his speech class. As an adolescent, he never dated girls, had few friends, and spent hours in his bedroom alone, playing with his tape recorder and a radio. At age 16, he took a six-week course and became a licensed radio broadcaster, which enabled him to secure employment as a disc jockey in a radio station that was partially owned by his father. In the 1970s, he worked as a disc jockey, newsreader, and talk show host. He was fired from radio stations in Kansas City and Pittsburgh and spent 5 years working in group ticket sales for the Kansas City Royals. After a brief return to radio broadcasting in Kansas City, Rush was selected to replace Morton Downey Jr., a shock radio host at a Sacramento, California radio station. His no-guest format made him look invincible, vaulting his talk show to number one in Sacramento, thus laying the foundation for his post in New York City as the nation's top talk show host. With this meager preparation, Limbaugh pretends to critique the work of Paul Ehrlich, Carl Sagan, and other distinguished scientists. He haughtily refers to President Clinton as Bubba, laughing tastelessly at doctored film footage which places himself as an on-site heckler of the president or the first lady. And he constantly flails away at the president's lack of character in a manner that begs the question about his own credentials to judge. This preoccupation with character comes from a man who has frequently changed jobs, spending much of his time in baseball ticket sales and the frivolous world of popular music. By contrast, our president seriously pursued his high school studies and, with little financial backing, qualified to study at Georgetown, Oxford University, and Yale Law School. Even more bizarre is the Limbaugh lip service to family values. While he focuses relentlessly on alleged incidents in the president's private life, his own three marriages and the fact that he has never raised a family go unmentioned. Limbaugh's strange sense of humor has included denouncements of those who help the homeless as compassion fascists. He's made cruel jokes and played song parodies about people who are living and dying on the street. He has belittled the president's following as a beggar-based constituency. He refers to dedicated feminists as feminazis, and the National Education Association has been labeled the National Extortion Association. Limbaugh has never been responsible or serious. In the salad days of what he now calls his Excellence in Broadcasting Network, he teased his audience with various superficial themes. One was his crusade to stop women from the dangerous practice of farting in cars. With mock intensity, he pursued this crusade to its climax, and then spilled the word he had used repeatedly for about a week. F-A-R-D-I-N-G, explaining to his radio audience that he had meant that women must be stopped from the dangerous practice of glossing their faces while driving. Rush's ditto-head audience responds enthusiastically to his absurd countdown of the days when America will no longer be held hostage by the Clinton administration, shouting, thumping the desk with his pudgy palms, utilizing mock tears, mock surprise, slurred speech, and other silly affectations. He entertains his puerile followers with tirades against liberals, whom he frequently calls socialists. And he derides the anchors of various newscasts and their networks as slavish followers of liberal thought. With much help from Roger Ailes and William F. Buckley, Jr., Limbaugh has been shaped into some semblance of legitimacy in the world of political comment. In reality, he is a cultivated but essentially barren partisan, a showman who has little understanding of his announced profession, and an opportunist with little sensitivity about what is humorous, what is tasteless, and what is tragic. With his benign, avuncular face, he charms and then strikes. A master of the pejorative, he fires cheap shots and dispenses caustic humor in the style of a shrieking, haggling fishwife. Rush's followers boisterously support his style. They are the pocketbook patriots who wrap themselves in the flag but refuse to support their government if it involves a personal financial commitment. They are encouraged by Limbaugh to honk at the president's health care campaign buses. They also cluster around the buses where they hurl verbal epithets and hold up signs that replace the C in President Clinton's name with the hammer and sickle, a symbol of communism. This type of pseudo-conservative fringe has always been with us. They supported the king in the American Revolution. They made a swift identification with Alexander Hamilton's government by the rich and well-born, casting aspersions on Jefferson and passing discriminatory legislation against new immigrants, small farmers, shopkeepers, and artisans. At mid-19th century, Rush's kind were the know-nothing members of the Order of the Star-Spangled Banner. In the 1920s, they dismantled progressive government programs of Theodore Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson and supported discriminatory immigration quotas. In the election of 1936, when right-wing crazies branded Franklin D. Roosevelt a communist, he responded in his inimitable style by saying, quote, "The true conservative seeks to protect the system of private property and free enterprise by correcting such injustices and inequalities as rise from it. The most serious threat to our institutions come from those who refuse to face the need for change. Liberalism becomes the protection for the far-sighted conservative. Wise and prudent men, intelligent conservatives, have long known that in a changing world, worthy institutions can be conserved only by adjusting them to the changing time. In the words of the great essayist, the voice of great events is proclaiming to us, reform if you would preserve. I am that kind of a conservative because I am that kind of liberal." End quote. Limbaugh's political progenitors never understood this. In later times, they joined the John Birch Society and cheered Senator Joseph McCarthy's assertions that there were over 200 communists in the State Department. Incapable of effectively discussing the important issues of the day, they accused Truman and Eisenhower of coddling communists and encouraged McCarthy's ridiculous hunt for subversives in the U.S. Army. The alarming thing is that this same irrational pseudo-conservative tradition is alive and well in the 1990s. The Limbaugh phenomenon is its modern manifestation. Political commentary should involve broad critical probing and balanced rational analysis of societal problems. Limbaugh's comment is narrow, selective, pointed, partisan, and laced with juvenile references to his moral stature, talent, and brain. It qualifies at best as crude humor, or perhaps political satire in a tabloid context. But when compared with great political satirists of the past, from Will Rogers to Mort Saul, Limbaugh stands out as the unsophisticated one who makes no attempt to ridicule both sides. While acid rain is destroying all life in thousands of lakes throughout the world and obliterating the forests of Europe, Canada, and parts of the northeastern United States, while reputable scientists warn of imminent danger from global warming, while NASA warns of the depletion of Earth's protective ozone layer, Limbaugh attacks the environmentalists and makes selective reference to some aspect of the environmental movement that can be easily ridiculed and discredited. His loaded references to environmental wackos and tree huggers delight the unsophisticated and uninformed. His slapstick is even more popular, particularly the manipulation of his huge frame through a mocking imitation of an environmentalist skipping through the woods. While 40 million people in America suffer without health insurance, Limbaugh ridicules the chief proponents of universal health care in America. He loves to put the image of the First Lady on screen, point out perceived absurdities in her statements, and make faces at her in the corner of the screen. Her recorded giggle has been played repeatedly as a standard put-down on both radio and television. Limbaugh loves to ridicule liberals. His clever half-truths, distortions, and put-downs popularize the notion that liberals are hopelessly dense and incompetent. Conservatives, by contrast, are intelligent and virtuous. They are the guardians of truth and honor. They are the hope of the future, and they were the great leaders in our past. How do these opinions of America's top talk show host compare with the experts in the field? What would happen if Limbaugh's assessments of conservatism and conservative leadership were pitted against the opinions of over 800 American historians? Fortunately, it is possible to make the comparison. In the 1982 Murray Blessing poll, 842 prominent historians ranked the 20th century Republican presidents who are generally considered conservative with this result. Ranked 18th, William McKinley, Republican. He served from 1897 to 1901 and is listed in the average category. Ranked 19th, William Howard Taft, Republican. He served from 1909 to 1913 and is listed in the average category. Ranked 21st, Herbert Hoover, Republican, who served 1929 to 1933, listed in the average category. And ranked 30th, Calvin Coolidge, a Republican, who served 1923 through 1929, and is listed in the below-average category. Ranked 36, Warren G. Harding, Republican, who served from 1921 to 1923, listed in the failure category. President Reagan was still in office in 1982 and therefore not ranked. But in his column on the presidency, in the April 15, 1991 issue of Time magazine, Hugh Seide reported that the historians in the Murray Blessing poll had conducted a follow-up assessment of Ronald Reagan, assigning him the number 28 in the below-average category. Where is the affirmation of Limbaugh's opinions of conservative leadership here? The top ranking goes to McKinley, who was assigned number 18 in the average category. The historians also ranked four 20th century presidents who were generally considered to be political moderates. They were listed in this order. Ranked 11, Dwight D. Eisenhower, Republican. He served from 1953 to 1961 and is listed in the above average category. Ranked 24th, Gerald Ford, Republican, served from 1973 to 1977, listed in the average category. Ranked 25th, Jimmy Carter, a Democrat, served from 1977 through 1981, listed in the average category. And ranked 34th, Richard Nixon, a Republican, who served from 1969 to 1973, listed in the failure category. It is apparent from these rankings that in the time span 1929 to 1989, Ronald Reagan outranked only one president, Richard Nixon. But the most galling statistic for Limbaugh is that the historians gave six 20th century presidents, considered to be progressives or liberals, the following ratings. Ranked number 2, Franklin D. Roosevelt, Democrat, 1933-1945, listed in the great category. Ranked number 5, Theodore Roosevelt, Republican, 1901-1909, in the near great category. Ranked number 6, Woodrow Wilson, Democrat, 1913-1921, in the near great category. Ranked 8th, Harry S. Truman, Democrat, who served from 1945 to 1953 and listed in the near great category. Ranked 10th, Lyndon Baines Johnson, Democrat, 1963-1969, listed in the above average category. And ranked number 13, John F. Kennedy, Democrat, served 1961-1963 and listed in the above average category. According to these rankings, the second most effective president of all time, surpassed only by Lincoln, was a 20th century liberal. Furthermore, the lowest ranked liberal of the 20th century was five places above the highest ranked conservative. Yet Mr. Limbaugh has convinced millions of followers that liberal is despicable. He has also publicly attacked Dr. Blessing for his part in conducting the historian's poll. It is certain that Mr. Limbaugh will continue to wield strong political influence on behalf of conservative and moderate Republicans in the 1994 congressional campaign and beyond. He is an effective propagandist in the employ of successful managers of conservative politicians. He utilizes time-tested methods of successful propagandists of the past. His live television audience does not participate in his talk show, except to cheer, clap, and make other supportive noises. He uses the straw man technique, incessant ridicule, and a bandwagon strategy that features self-centered puffing, bragging, and sloganeering. And as Limbaugh's one-man propaganda machine grinds on, there is no chance that anyone who is victimized will ever be invited to respond. Fortunately, health care reform and other momentous issues will be fairly discussed in legitimate national forums. It is preeminently the time for open, face-to-face political discussion. barking, clowning, name-calling, and thought control are destructive of the venerated processes of our great system.